Please note that there are technical problems with the audio recording for this dialogue. Please excuse the poor quality of the sound.
Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
Okay, please welcome back around this way. So I just wanted to start by asking you about the source material based on a collection of short stories that you tell us and how you came across deciding to make a film.
So first I discovered the country. I went to Haiti.
Four years ago, in fact, to meet people who were there at that moment. And, you know, when you arrive in this country, you are obviously shocked by what you discover, because in the same times you have the feeling to see very terrible thing with violence, with the misery, with
despair.
Okay, thank you. And in the same times I had a feeling to be in front of a sort of lost paradise, where, you know, you feel a way of living, a way of speaking, which is very right. People like to speak with you, and you never know when you go out in a street in Port-au-Prince if you're gonna hear gunshot or meet someone who will talk to you for 2 or 3 hours and just take
time to just enjoy life. And so when I left the country for the
first time, I knew that I would come back. I didn't know I would make a film, but I knew it was a place where that touched me a lot, that moved me a lot. And on the plane back to Paris, I bought the book by Dany Laferrière in Port-au-Prince, and I
began to read the book at the very beginning of the travels, and couldn't sleep during the whole night, and just wrote the book. And the day after, I knew that I would enjoy to make a film from this novel.
What was your view? What I'm really interested in is the view the film takes of the characters. It's very complex, I think, very interesting. These are not easily sympathetic characters, they're very complicated. And I wanted to really ask both of you about Brenda, about this woman, this character, Charlotte Rampling's character, passing judgment on her. I want to know maybe what you both felt, maybe from your standpoint as a writer, and then when you got the script, and then how you decided to interpret it.
For me, those two women impressed me because they are obviously wearing a mask. And I think they believe that they are the person they show at the beginning of the film. For Brenda, she is this kind of a very romantic teenager who is arriving here with the feeling that she can meet her prince, her charming prince, and she looks like a teenager, right, for me. And in the same time, as soon as she makes her first monologue, you can be sure that she hides herself something about herself, which is what she's coming here for.
And I like all the time it takes to take out the mask, and so that she can accept the woman she is. It means a woman that is in love, a woman that was so
frustrated by her life that she needed this journey to accept her and accept that she is someone who is desiring.
She's she thinks she has to be in love for fulfillment, which is what leads her to Katie under those circumstances. And she's not able to recognize that she's entitled to desire and to do what she needs to do to fulfill that. So she goes, falls in love, madly in love, you know, like a teenager. And what I like best about the script,
I read it, is how they, Ellen and Brenda, switch at the end, where you think Ellen is so cavalier. She's really deeply wounded and deeply in love. And it's the opposite for me. I'm just, that's all that was. Oh, well, now I'm free. You know, I can go and do life differently. I like that aspect of it when I read the script very much.
Could you tell us about some of the challenges in preparing yourself to play the role? Did you go back to the source material?
No, it's not in English. Mm-hmm. So I only had the script. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't privileged to read the... It's not translated into English, unfortunately.
So she just obeyed.
What? I just obeyed, yeah. I did.
And how did you view Brenda? I mean, the film is sort of questioning her romanticism.
It's very American.
Yet it has to be believable, too.
Yeah, I just found her very, very American. Just so throws herself into it without a lot of thinking about what she's actually doing, you know, with a lot of preconceptions. And her entitlement is misplaced, I think, you know. She thinks she's madly in love, but she doesn't question it. And she just acts blindly and sort of leads him to this dangerous place, Legba, you know.
Right.
I think Ellen is right. Her, well, stupidity is a strong word, but her blindness to his situation, to his circumstances in the country, she really kind of draws him into getting a lot of notice, a lot of attention, which is not good for him there.
Mm-hmm. One question, then we'll open it up to the audience. But I want to ask about how pervasive and how true this is. So this portrait of sex, what you call sex tourism in Haiti, is this, you know, how exaggerated is it? How true is it?
Right. In fact, in Haiti right now, you don't have
any more tourism at all. Right? But part of the film was shot, the hotel, in fact, was shot in the Dominican Republic, and that's very common here that women comes here to be boys and fulfill the sort of sexual that they can't fulfill in their own countries.
When I was telling people the story, two people said they knew other people who were doing this. One woman had taken her pension fund and bought a horse farm in Jamaica. her boyfriend was running it. You know, so and another person had another similar story. So it was, you know, it was totally believable.
And most historically, most of the women who came. or Brits were American or Canadian. It was not a place where the European were coming.
Okay, you had a question right there.
No, I had a comment.
Okay.
I disagree with your take on Brenda, by the way. I thought it was a pro-feminist film. I think the mask that you described it as necessary, because when I was growing up, girls who had fun were called sluts, and it's still that way a lot, and so they had no choice but to wear a mask and conveniently and intelligently go down to these islands. And how is she supposed to know the complexity of the politics down there? I think she was sweet and loving. I don't think she was stripped out for herself. We're all self-serving to some degree. And if she was sweet and loving, how is she supposed to know how corrupt and racist?
So the question, in a way, is that it's a pro-feminist film and a showing of woman's desires. You're dealing with, I think as you said, maybe there are a few films about women in their 40s or over, and their sexual desires, and that this character wouldn't know about the political ramifications.
What the cop said at the end of the film, when he says tourists never die, or he doesn't want to accept that Charlotte Hélène could be involved in the death of Legba, even if she tries to tell him that, right, that's maybe her fault. I think when you are a tourist, you never really share anything with the country in which you are.
Let's take some other questions.
You always managed to get really incredible performances in all your films, and one of the scenes that stood out in this was early on when Brenda is dancing on the beach with the younger boy, and Legba jumps up, and you see on Charlotte Rampling's face first surprise and then hurt, and then she tries to cover up and put on a smile. And I'm wondering about your method or your technique for throughout the
Okay. Yeah, a question about your working method with actors. So we see so many different emotions going on. You seem to also like long takes, long shots where you can see things unfold.
It's really rare to have there's 15 scenes in the movie roughly, so we would go to location and spend days there, which is very unusual. Usually you go to location for half a day, you move to another location, the next day is another location, and you never get used to it, you just sort of, you know, trucked around. This is different. So you could actually get acclimated to your location, to your to the people you were working with. It was very different. It's a very different way of working.
Just on a shot-by-shot basis, it also seems like the shots are a bit longer, that Vermont gives you space to have things unfold.
Yeah, many takes, which is a...
Many separate things,
many takes.
Give me a number
compared to shooting here, you get free.
Okay.
Or if you're really in trouble. And this is, you know, 6, 7, 8... sometimes more. For good reason. I like that part.
This is for Laurent. How much instruction do you think? Aside from doing other things.
I don't know.
He's very particular. Very particular because he knew what he was seeing. And when you're an actor, you never know. I don't watch daily, so I don't know how I'm appearing. So he knows what he's seeing. He knows what he wants to see, and he guides you into giving him what he wants to see. And it can be very specific, or it can be just a suggestion. But I like the specificity of it. The more detailed he was, the better the results. I love to be told what to do, you know, and it worked.
And this is another part of the work we had together with all the actors. Was it 1 week before starting shooting, we were all together on the set, and we wrote the script, and we changed all what we needed to change. We rehearsed some scenes, and we had a lot of time to speak. Usually I rehearsed much more than that before. It was so difficult to hear with someone in New York, someone in Montreal, me in Dominican Republic, others in Port-au-Prince, so it was very difficult to have everybody together for a long time. But for 1 week, even more than 1 week, 10 days, we stayed together and first learned to know each other, which is for me really important. I can't imagine to arrive on the first day of shooting and so it's you. And that is, everybody knows each other. And I think that's maybe the most important thing for me.
How did you cast Karen?
I came in New York and someone showed me a lot of cassette of different women from of this type. I met her and we discussed for an hour first, and so she would be the one, and she came back another second time with the scene, the monologue in fact, and she made the monologue in front of the camera, and I was really, you know, close to cry at the end, so I thought, that's her.
And since you mentioned that there were changes made during this rehearsal process, that you changed the script, what was the nature of that? what were you learning and changing in that early process?
This particular film, we mainly changed some dialogues because of the translation, because of the fact that I don't understand English as well as some others do. And, you know, this...
Subtleties are
very difficult for me to analyze. And Karen, Charlotte were discussing a lot on the translation of the word that they, that one should use or not use, and we made a lot of change on that level. Usually in my other film, I rehearse much more, and there are bigger changes.
Karen, I just wanted to ask you one thing about process. In a film that's so much about sexuality is one of the main themes, is there an awareness of your body and sexual desire? And how does this affect your acting process, your self-conscious? Does it make you more self-conscious that you would be in a kind of role?
It was what the movie was about, so
right.
I knew that when I read it. It was really clear that that was what it was about, so it was nice to have a chance to go through all that. Mm-hmm. You know, usually you have an aspect of your sexuality, you know, you've either lost it or you're hiding it or you are flaunting it. It's always like a little sliver of you're allowed to play one aspect of it. You go the whole gamut. You know, she looks terrible in a lot of scenes. Brenda, you know, and then when she's dancing, you think, you know, she looks very different throughout all of, she's, you know, it's a fully realized sexual portrait,
right.
You know, rather than just a little aspect, this piece of this, you know.
What was that dancing scene like to do?
That was really hard. It was really hard to do because the music is so... requires that type of dancing that you don't really do, you know, in this country. It's you know, a lot of muscles that I've never used. I had a really, really, you know, I was just very sore afterwards. And not tonight. And it was a night shoot, which is always a little difficult, you know, so we were up all night long, you know. It's great music, though, so it was easy to do, but I suffered after.
Sounds like a hard shoot. Sorry. It sounds like a difficult thing. Over here.
I think I paid attention, and all I know about Brenda is that she's 45 when she has an orgasm. She takes what she wants. Did I miss anything about her background? That's my question. Because she's so absolutely only present in the present. We don't seem to be able to go back into any kind of a history at all.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything? Does she have a family? Does she have a house?
Okay, how do you think about Brenda's past?
We had discussed it, you know, when we had gotten together. We understood it. I think it was understood between the cast and she had a husband, no children, and she had a very comfortable life in Atlanta. And, just was unlucky. You know, just kind of went on vacation, like, you know, middle class people can do. Found themselves in Haiti. And then that's where the story takes over. And I think it's just so that at that turning point in her life when she meets Lightbulb and she goes to Haiti, is everything. There's no point in going back and sliding through history and so forth. You know, it doesn't really help me, to be honest.
But I didn't miss it.
You didn't miss it?
I mean, the information
of her past, we know in this particular afternoon in which she met Legba for the first time 3 years ago.
Right.
That's the beginning of her story is here.
Okay, that's
okay.
Exactly
the question. Tell us about your first viewing. You said you don't watch Dailies.
I was wearing these jewels that were lent to me from Bulgaria, and I really hurting my ears sitting in the chair. I knew that when I was watching it, when you see a scene, that's how we felt. We knew she had your good hands. That's what it felt like when I was doing it. It's not like at all, but you thought it was going to be like it. And you know you're terrible. So I was very happy to watch it. It's I'd like to keep watching it. I never get tired of watching it. This is the third or fourth time I've seen it. And normally I'd watch it.
And can you tell us what your do you have an next film? Can you tell us about your next project? You know,
I don't know enough, but I have to assume it's supposed to take place in the States.
Okay. We'll just take one more question. Can you talk briefly about the casting of Charlotte Rampling?
Okay.
Casting
in fact, I met her even before writing the film. I had the film in mind, and I just tried to ask her if she wanted to accept to discuss with me, and we met. And after 2 hours of speaking, she asked me the question that could help me to do writing, and she told me that she would really be happy to make the film. I sent her the script as soon as I had a first version, and she took quite a long time to answer. Not a very long time, but 1 week. I was very, very afraid that she didn't like the film, and she finally she acknowledged that the character is very difficult to accept. And that she liked the film, she liked the character, but she was afraid of being this character. And she wrote again, and then decided that she wanted to make the film. But she was always with me, even when we had to change the date of shooting. We were supposed to shoot one year earlier. But it was exactly at the moment where Aristide, the President Aristide, was fired from Haiti, and we couldn't go there with the crew and an actress. And so we had to change the date of the shooting. And Charlotte told me, no, there is no problem with me. I want to make the film, so even if you change, I will be with you. So.
She seems perfect. Okay, well, I want to thank both of you. It was very generous of you to share this.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.